This past week, I met with senior leaders in an organization that wanted me to come in and help their managers be better. And that's kind of a vague description, but they know my expertise in employee engagement. In fact, I've helped them before and they're calling me back in. It's been probably 8 or 9 years since the last time I was in there. And some of the things we did last time, they're asking me to do some different things this time, but some of the things we did last time, probably didn't get maintained. There's been a lot of leadership change within the organization, and they've called me back. The CEO called me in, and I met with him and their CFO, and we had a conversation about some of the challenges they've had in their organization. And some of these, what they described to me is something that I hear and see all the time, and it might resonate to you as I describe it. So they talked about how they promote people from within whenever they can, and those managers then don't get a lot of training. They fully admitted, we're not really great at that. We're not really great at training those managers. And why is it so important to train managers well? Well, when you think of the reasons people become managers, then it will become clear. So I want you to think about it for a second. Why do people become managers? Do you know? I mean, if you're a manager, you probably know why you became a manager, how you got that, what you were doing before. But what was it that led you to being a manager? And hopefully managers are listening to this. I'm going to talk about four reasons that are fairly typical. These are something you'll see. And these are some of these are the ones that this organization admitted to. The one that they admitted to fully, and they said, we do this far too often. We promote the leading individual contributor or a leading individual contributor on the team. So somebody who was doing the work on the team becomes the manager. They get promoted to be the manager, which, first of all, is not a great way to choose a manager. That's a different skill set. Great managers have a rare combination of five specific talents that make them great. And we'll talk about those before this episode is over. But this organization, this CEO and this CFO said to me, yeah, we do that. Or we promote people from within, and they were a top contributor on the team. Now, the reason this is kind of a fallacy in the wisdom of this is that it is a different skill set. You could be a great individual contributor, but it has nothing to do with leading a team or managing a team. And so when you do that, you make the team less effective right away, because you're taking that individual contributor who was a star out of the mix, and they're not doing the work anymore. If you're doing it right, then they're managing the team. But then the additional challenge comes when, as this organization admitted, we're not good at training the manager once we put them there. So we stick them out on this management island of the team and give them no supplies, give them no tools, no training, no ability to succeed in that. And so the team has lost a star performer, and they also still don't have a manager. You know, this is a leading reason. If you looked at the managers in your organization, and if you're a manager, is this your story? That's how I got into management. Now, I wanted to go into management for different reasons. I wasn't pushed into it. I actually applied for the job, but I wasn't fully ready for it either, quite honestly. And it took some training and some figuring out. And the organization I was in wasn't particularly great at training me as a manager. I had to kind of go out and get that on my own. Say somebody gets thrown into that role because they were a great contributor and they don't get the help and they don't know where to go for the help and they just wish they weren't there. I talk to people all the time who tell me that story. I didn't want to go into management. I'm stuck here and nobody's helping me out. I wish I could just go back to my job. I'm thinking of an example that came up. This comes up all the time, but an example that came up about 4 or 5 years ago. On LinkedIn, a gentleman reached out to me who was a manager in an organization in Colorado. And he reached out to me because he'd been reading a lot of my articles on LinkedIn. And he came to me and he said, boy, a lot of what you talk about really resonates with me. I'm that guy who got pushed into management as being a top contributor. And I hate it. I just hate it. I'm not thriving. I wish I could go back to my job where I was thriving as an individual contributor, but I can't. And I've broached the subject and they're discouraging it. And I feel like if I really wanted to do that, I have to quit this company. And I've always liked the company, but now that I'm in management, I feel stuck. What a horrible feeling that is. I reached out to him again, probably 6 or 8 months ago, just to see how things were going. And he said, well, I've gone through 2 other organizations since that one. And he said, I'm still, unfortunately, in management. As I recall, he said he wasn't able to get back into an individual role like where he was. He couldn't in that organization, and he wasn't able to find one that was as good in an organization he liked. And so he stayed reluctantly in management. How sad. Isn't that sad? We get pushed to where we don't want to be, and we make the Bruce Jenner mistake from my book, A Passion for Monday. You know, the Bruce Jenner mistake is trying to be something you're not. Caitlyn Jenner said in her first interview, I think in Vanity Fair, I was Bruce Jenner for 65 years and miserable. How often do we do that in organizations? And this gentleman that reached out to me was doing that. He's making the Bruce Jenner mistake. He's trying to be something he's not, a manager. And so many reluctant managers are in that position. They would love to go back to their old role, but they can't. And it's very difficult to do that. Some organizations won't allow you to do that. And some organizations will cut your pay back to where it was if you do that. And so there's not a lot of incentive to do that, but still they're miserable. They're miserable in that role because they used to maybe even love their job, but now they kind of hate it. So that's one reason. And this organization told me, we do that. We'll cop to that. We do that. And that's why we're calling you in, because we know you have been a successful manager and you're somebody who has expertise in employee engagement, and you have shown that as a manager, and you've done it in organizations, and you helped us in our organization before, and we kind of lost sight of what you helped us with. So we're bringing you back, and we want to make it stick this time. So that's one of the reasons people become managers. Think of other reasons. How about this one? I've been at the company for a long time. I want to make more money, but I'm at the top of my salary grade. And so I say, how do I make more money? And they say to me, well, you've got to go into management. That's the next place you can go. You're gonna have to go into management if you want to make more money. You're going to have to be content with where you are and what you're making. So these reluctant managers go into that role. And again, they never wanted to be that. And they really have no incentive to lead because they never wanted to do that job in the first place. So you'll see these reluctant managers who, again, struggle. And if they can grab that role by the horns and really want to develop, and the organization can help them develop, then they might have some degree of success. But again, still not the optimal reason. A third reason people become managers is they want to be the boss. Not just do they want to be the boss, they want to be bossy. They're upwardly mobile, and they're prepared to step on people to get there. And that is really not a great reason to become a manager, because they make everybody miserable. They might be happy because they got that job finally, but they're the only one on the team that's typically happy because they got the job. They're not really caring about the team. They're not looking at the team for what they can give to the team and breaking down the barriers and holding people accountable and selling them the vision. They don't care about the vision. I got the role. Now I got to. Now they're looking beyond the mark, and they're going. What do I have to do to get to the next level? And when they are successful as managers in that first level of management, it's because somebody's told them, well, you got to do this and this and this to be able to get to the next level. So again, they reluctantly manage their team because it's what they have to do to move on and no longer manage that team, but to manage at a higher level. So those three reasons are really dismal reasons, but they make up the majority of the reasons people become managers. And there is an article in Harvard Business Review called Why Good Managers Are So Rare. You can also Google Why Great Managers Are So Rare. You'll find that on Gallup.com, but it's the same article written by the same author. Both, and this article talks about some research that the Gallup organization did over, it's a longitudinal study over decades of time. And it says, I'm quoting that article right now. It says, Gallup has found one of the most important decisions companies make is simply whom they name manager. Yet our analytics suggest they usually get it wrong. In fact, Gallup finds that companies fail to choose the candidate with the right talent for the job 82% of the time. That means 82% of managers out there right now are not fit for the job, but the company still chose them. The other thing, so then it goes on to say, bad managers cost businesses billions of dollars each year, and having too many of them can bring down a company. The only defense against this problem is a good offense, because when companies get these decisions wrong, nothing fixes it. So the best thing you can do is, if you've made all those poor decisions, is to at least train them well. And that's one of the, that's what this company has called me in to help them with. Another interesting thing they got from this study, and it talks about this in the article, and here I'm going to quote from the article again. Few managers have the talent to achieve excellence. If great managers seem scarce, it's because the talent required to be one is rare. Gallup's research reveals that about 1 in 10 people possess the talent to manage. About 1 in 10 people possess the talent to manage. Not 1 in 10 managers, not 1 in 10 of this 82%, not 1 in 10 of all the managers out there. No, 1 in 10 people. And so they also point out in this article that you have, if you have an organization of any appreciable size, you probably have people to be great managers. But because of your poor promotional decisions, they're probably not the managers. They're probably the other ones that have become managers for those first three reasons. Now, I'm going to give you a fourth reason, and this is a good reason why people would become managers, because they are developers of people. They are achievers of excellence, and they want to see not just individuals succeed. They know that by helping individuals succeed and grow and bring out their best talents, that the whole team gets better. When the whole team gets better, the whole organization gets better. And so that fourth reason, they want to become managers because they're developers of people and they're achievers of excellence. That's the one that, you know, these 1 in 10 people, those are the ones that are capable of doing that, but they're not the managers in most organizations. And so that's what's so interesting about this study. So this is what we're talking about in the Love Monday podcast now. We're going to be talking about this for a while, how to make good managers great and how to make managers that are miscast better, so that they can be more productive and they can be more helpful to their organization. So if you're an individual contributor and you've been listening to the Love Monday podcast and you're not in management and you don't aspire to be in management, I hope you'll stay with us, because these will be concepts that will help you choose good managers in the future. You'll be able to, this stuff should resonate with you, because you'll see as I highlight bad examples and good examples when you've had a good manager or a bad manager. Now, I've done a podcast before on how to hire a great manager. If you are not that you're hiring the managers, but you're hiring your manager every time you go get a new job. And there's an episode back from last year. It talks about questions you can ask your boss to help detect if you've got one of these 82% that are poor managers. And those questions will actually help you detect that and help you test for that. So there's going to be stuff for you too. But the other thing I would tell you is share this podcast with people who are managers that you know, maybe your own manager. Say, hey, I know this great podcast and it helps managers be better managers. So I wanted to go a little bit more into this article again and to talk about that great managers have the following talents, have these talents, these five talents. Number one, they motivate every single employee to take action and engage employees with a compelling mission and vision. If you're a manager, do you feel you do that? And if you're on a team with a manager, do you feel your manager engages you with a compelling mission and vision? Do they motivate you with a compelling mission and vision? And that is, what is the organization? What do we do in this organization? And here is your part in the work of the organization. This is why what you come in and do every day is so important to us. And this is your contribution. What you do, this is how it contributes to what we're doing as an entire organization to fulfill our mission. Does your manager do that? If you're a manager, are you doing that with your team? Or are you too busy doing other stuff and working other projects to actually motivate with a compelling mission and vision? Number two, great managers have the assertiveness to drive outcomes and the ability to overcome adversity and resistance. So managers get stuck between this rock and hard place all the time. They're getting directives from above and they're trying to make it work for the people below them who they're managing. And so sometimes they get a push from below saying, I need this and this and this to be successful. And they have to take that back up the line and say, my people need this and this and this to be successful. And people above them are pushing back down saying, we don't have the budget for that. You can't have that. Does your manager, or if you are a manager, do you have the assertiveness to drive those outcomes? Or do you feel like, oh, my team's complaining about they need new computers or they need these new tools or whatever? I don't know how to go take that up the chain. I'm just going to avoid it. I don't have that assertiveness. I don't really want to do that. I can mention it, but I'm not going to push very hard because that's going to look bad for me. So do you as a manager have the assertiveness to drive the outcomes for your team to help them be successful, breaking down those barriers and so forth? Number three, great managers create a culture of clear accountability. Are you holding people accountable for doing great work? And if not, do you know the impact that's having on your entire team? You may be looking at somebody who's underperforming and you're not handling it because you don't like to have those conversations, but I'm telling you, every member on your team sees that. And that lowest performing member of your team is setting the standard for your team. Regardless of what you say or do, the lowest performing member of the team sets the standard. And your top performers aren't going to stand for it. They want to be with a bunch of top performers, and they're eventually going to leave you. So when your top performers leave, the entire quality and productivity and performance of the team goes down because they were covering and carrying a large percentage of the work for the team. So you need to be able to hold your team accountable, every member of your team accountable, so that they are performing at their top levels. Now, think about it for you. If you're not a manager and you think about your teams, is this happening? And does it seem like somebody's getting away with it? You've got somebody on your team who's underperforming. They're not engaged in their work. And it seems like nobody says anything to them, because, and they must not be, because they continue to underperform and get away with it. That's a situation where your manager does not create a culture of clear accountability. Number four, great managers build relationships that create trust, open dialogue, and full transparency. If you're a manager, are you doing that? Do you know how to do that? Because we're going to talk about these things in these upcoming episodes, so make sure you stay tuned. And if you're on a team with a manager, does your manager create that trust? Is there open dialogue? Can you take your opinions? Do your opinions seem to count with your manager? And when something's going on, does it feel like you're not getting the straight scoop on it? They're keeping secrets from you? Because there are very few secrets that need to be kept in a company. Now, a lot of organizations do that because it's like this quote unquote need to know basis. Well, most people in the entire organization need to know everything. Now, there are things that could affect compliance and stock prices and insider trading issues. There are companies out there who still share all that stuff. A great example of that is Netflix. And if you want to read more about that, there's a great book called No Rules Rules. It's got a red cover, written by the CEO of Netflix. And he talks about how they are fully transparent with all of their employees. And there are things that they know are risky to tell everyone. But they're very clear that, hey, we're going to share with you right now. And just let it be known right now that if you share this and we find out that you did, you will be fired. It's not that you might be fired. You will be fired. This is confidential information, but we consider you members of the team and you need to know it, but you just can't share it. Not with your friends, not with your family, not with each other. You're all hearing it right now and you don't talk about this anymore. You can be that transparent. There is literally no organization that needs to hold that back. And we see this in politics all the time. This has come up in the news recently, where there are some things that they don't want to share with us as citizens of the United States. And some of these things are going on. And it's like, why can't we know this? Is it really that top secret? And how much access do we have to international people who are going to put us at risk? So, I mean, I'm kind of going off topic here, but that's an example of that. And in companies, that almost never exists, that they can't share everything with you. But sometimes we get this culture where we don't. And so we feel that our manager is not trusting us. And that really undermines that manager-employee relationship. Number five, the fifth thing that Gallup found in their study that makes a great manager, they make decisions based on productivity and not politics. Now, you have to know what the productivity of your team is to be able to make decisions based on that. So you should have metrics for your team if you're a manager. And if you're on a team, are you being told how you're performing in numeric ways, in measurable ways? Now, this whole concept of making decisions based on productivity and not politics, that third reason that people become managers, that manager that just wants to be the boss, in almost all the cases, those people are making decisions based on politics and not productivity. They don't care about the productivity. They're just trying to get to the next level. And so every decision they make is a political decision. And don't get me wrong, a lot of decisions have a political facet to them and a political element. But to make decisions based on politics and not productivity is very counterproductive to the team, because people see right through it and they say, oh, well, I got to play some bullcrap game to get ahead here. I got to play the politics thing. And you do, to some extent. There are some political things that you want to do. You don't want to, you know, commit political suicide and some making some bad decisions. But it's not about politics, and it shouldn't be about politics. It should be productivity first, and then, you know, these little tangential political facets to it. That's one thing. So there is that. I don't want to completely discount that. But great managers make decisions based on productivity and not politics. So those are some of the things that make great managers. And so I wanted to talk about that today. Why people become managers, how they become managers, and how organizations make that choice. They make the wrong choice 82% of the time. And only 1 in 10 people have the talent it takes to be a manager. And so the managers you have in most organizations aren't part of those 1 in 10. Most of them aren't. And so that's a really sad thing. So that's what we're about on the Love Monday podcast. As we go forward, we're going to talk about how to make bad managers good and good managers great and great managers superb. And we're going to help everybody ratchet up that way. And because when we can help managers help their people love Monday just like Friday, but for a different reason, it raises the tide and lifts all the boats. The whole organization goes up. And when the whole organization goes up and across organizations, it lifts the whole economy. And that's what we want to do. If you're an individual contributor and you want to know how to love Monday just like Friday for yourself, I've got at least 50 episodes on how to do that individually. And go out and listen to those others. Now, don't quit listening because you're not a manager, because like I said earlier, you're going to get things that are going to help you by being able to identify whether you have a great manager or not. And again, you can share this podcast with your manager who may not be so great, and maybe they'll catch a vision. And maybe you can share it within your organization. And like this company who has called me in, and many companies have done this, like this company has called me back in to help them again, I could come in and help your organization do these things as well. So stay tuned. We're going to talk about how good managers become great. We're going to talk about how managers should become coaches more than managers and more than bosses. And I hope you join me for the ride. Thanks for joining today, and I'll talk to you soon.